From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we pick up where we ended yesterday and present the second half of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast, in which Hank talked with Robert Spencer, the director of Jihad Watch and the author of 17 books, including the New York Times bestseller, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades. Let's rejoin Hank and Robert Spencer in their conversation.
But for example, a few years ago, I was invited to speak to a Catholic organization, and then the local bishop, Robert McManus of Worcester, Massachusetts, actually canceled me and explained that he was canceling me because I would be speaking about Muslim persecution of Christians, and that could harm the wonderful dialogue they were having with Muslims in the Boston area. I thought about that when the Boston Marathon bombings happened, because those young men who carried out the Boston Marathon bombings, they were members of the Islamic Society of Boston that McManus was in dialogue with, and apparently the dialogue didn't help enough to prevent those bombings. And more than that, of course, you have the problem of the fact that if you're going to avoid speaking about the Muslim persecution of Christians, then how is the dialogue helping anything? If you can't, it's not preventing a single Christian from being persecuted. It's not keeping a single church from being destroyed. What good is it? And what McManus had inadvertently acknowledged by saying that was that he was essentially submitting to the Islamic rules, here again, regarding blasphemy. The idea that you don't criticize Islam, you don't criticize Muhammad, you don't criticize the Quran, you don't criticize the Muslim behavior, the Muslim persecution of Christians, because that's beyond the pale as far as Islamic law is concerned. And so I don't think he realized it, of course, but the dialogue that he was so anxious to preserve, even though it was worthless, was essentially leading him to submit to Sharia blasphemy restrictions.
You know, the mantra, Islam is a religion of peace and tolerance, a lot of people rationalize saying this because they say, if you say it, then the intolerance of Muslims will stay underground. If you don't, you're going to exacerbate hostilities that otherwise would be dormant. Talk for a moment, Robert, about the absurdity of that kind of reasoning.
Well, it's the classic Dhimmi mentality, the mentality of the subjugated people under the rule of Islamic law who know that they must not criticize Islam on pain of death. And so they don't say anything negative about even how they're being treated, because the way they're being treated is based on Islamic law. And if they call attention to that, then they are essentially criticizing Islam and the things will go even worse for them. Now, I think that this is another kind of counterfeit charity and counterfeit prudence in this case, that you have people thinking that they must not call attention to how they're being mistreated or how others are being mistreated, because that will only make it worse. Well, it may make it worse by the actions of the persecutor, but it may also draw the attention of people who can stop the persecutor. And so I think we have an obligation in genuine charity, in being careful to be concerned for the well-being of others, we have an obligation to speak out about these things, to try to draw attention, the attention of the powerful, to these issues so that they can take the necessary steps to protect the people who are being persecuted.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about persecution. We're experiencing soft persecution in the West. There's a lot going on in the East that I want to talk to you about, but I want to tell you about your personal experience. I mean, you've been persecuted. I think that word really applies to you. You've actually been poisoned in Iceland, as I understand it. Give us a little color commentary on what your life has been as a result of speaking the truth in love.
Well, yes, I was poisoned in Iceland, and that was by a putative well-wisher who came over to our table at a restaurant after a very successful event we had there. And he leaned over the table, shook my hand, and later on, I was quite ill for a while and spent the night in the hospital. it seems that the most likely explanation is that he, well, there was poison in my system, so it seems likely that he dropped it into the drink that I had there while he leaned over the table. In any case, he did that probably because he's a leftist and thought that he was doing something righteous to make the putative fascist, Nazi, or whatever, ill. But that was one thing. I think that the main thing that has been, in terms of what you might call persecution, that might be a bit, a bit much, but I mean, certainly Christians are being persecuted and losing their homes, losing their lives. I wouldn't presume to put myself in that category. But certainly in terms of ostracism, in terms of opprobrium and vilification, not just from the left, which I kind of expect at this point, and from Islamic groups in the United States that are connected to Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood, that's one thing. But also, for example, I mentioned before the one bishop, McManus of Worcester, but the entire Catholic Church, really, you can put down as not on my side. A few years back, I spoke at a Lutheran conference in Texas, and they were very nice people who were very quite welcoming. But the Lutheran bishop who had invited me told me a very interesting thing while I was there. He said that this particular Lutheran group, they had a representative from the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops at their annual conference, where I was the keynote speaker that year, at their annual conference every year. And yet this year, that particular year, 2015, when they discovered that I was the keynote speaker, they pulled out. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops wants nothing to do with the idea that Islam is not a religion of peace. And I even had a Catholic prelate, a Monsignor, who is the president of Donnelly College in Kansas City, Kansas, Monsignor Stuart Sweatland. And we debated about whether Islam is a religion of peace on a radio show last year. And then he actually claimed at the end of the debate, and then later in some written material, that it was actually the teaching of the Catholic Church that Islam is a religion of peace, and that you can't be a faithful Catholic without believing that Islam is a religion of peace. And so I thought, well, if that's the case, then I just won't. I just cannot be a faithful Catholic. But certainly, many other bishops have canceled my appearances, and the Catholic Church is committed as an institution to Pope Francis and his false statements about how the religion of Islam is peaceful, and the Quran, authentic Islam, and the proper understanding of the Quran is opposed to every form of violence. That's what Pope Francis said. And of course, that is because of the creeping idolatry, the papalolatry of the Catholic Church today, that takes pretty much anything that the Pope, anything and everything that the Pope says, is some sort of divine oracle. There are many, many Catholic groups and individuals who ought to know better who think, well, they just have to now say that Islam is a religion of peace, and so there's just no place for me in all that. This is something that makes it impossible to continue. If the whole organization is opposed to the truth, well, then the truth will just have to be set outside it.
Well, I know one thing. In the Eastern Orthodox family, there are a lot of people that love and admire you, not the least of which our mutual friend Father Alex at the Archdiocese in New York.
Well, I'm a great admirer of his, and very grateful. I spoke at an Orthodox conference a few months ago at his invitation, and I was very honored to be there. And a marvelous group of people, and I greatly admire, and I'm grateful for the fact that the Orthodox Church is much more willing to speak these uncomfortable truths and unwelcome truths about these issues.
Well, they've faced it. I mean, you alluded to this, to what has happened in the past. I mean, I remember you mentioning Smyrna. Many people forget about the Holocaust that is Smyrna.
Yeah, they don't know. People have no idea of any of that. And I can tell you, Hank, growing up, even as a young member of the Orthodox Church, when I was a kid, I didn't know anything about this. People didn't talk about it, and I didn't learn about it until later. And I was actually somebody who was very avid to know. I wanted to know, because of my grandparents' experience, what had gone on. But it took me quite a few years to piece together everything. People don't realize that all of what is now Western Turkey, the part by including Istanbul or Constantinople, and Smyrna, Izmir, and many other of the cities in the western part. That was a predominantly Christian area, Greek area, and of course there were Armenian Christians in the western part, in the eastern part of what is now Turkey. Both of these groups, the Greek Christians and the Armenian Christians, were classified as Kufar Harbi that I mentioned before, infidels at war with Islam. This was the linchpin of the Armenian genocide. There was also a genocide of the Greek Christians in the West to a lesser degree and with much less notice, although both have been consistently denied by the Turkish government ever since. Nonetheless, the documentary evidence is overwhelming. Millions of people were killed and millions of people were exiled, and the areas were completely effaced of any Christian presence. I remember reading about a woman who had a family experience much like mine, but she actually took her Christian grandmother back to Turkey, to her village, which was by the Black Sea. The Christian presence was all around the southern part of the Black Sea, as well as in the western part of Anatolia, or what is now Turkey. And they were asking the local people, where are the Christian houses? Where did the Christians used to live? And everybody they spoke to there said, oh, there were never any Christians here. Christians never lived here. And that's the that amnesia is not just shared by the Turks, but by Western Christians as well, that they have no idea of the genocide that took place there, the ethnic cleansing, the complete erasure of a Christian presence that was going back to the beginning, to the very earliest days of the church, now completely effaced. I mean, of course, we know that St. Paul in the New Testament, all those places he wrote to, Colossae, and Philippi, you know, I'm used to, referring to them, Philippians, Colossians, Ephesians, all of those cities are in Asia Minor, are in what is now Turkey, and they're Muslim cities. But this is because of not so much the conquest of Constantinople in 1453, but the complete erasure of the Christian presence from Asia Minor, which took place at the beginning in the late 19th and especially in the early 20th century.
I don't know that people know how bad this has really gotten. You mentioned Turkey a number of times. The minuscule presence of Christians in Turkey is almost beyond belief. I don't know what the latest figures are, 1%, something like that?
Yeah, it's minuscule. And of course, the Turks are trying to destroy the Orthodox Church altogether. They have the Patriarch of Constantinople, of course, who's still there in Istanbul. And yet they demand by Turkish law that the Patriarch of Constantinople be a Turkish citizen who has been educated in the Christian faith in Turkey. And yet they closed the only seminary for Christian priests in Turkey. So they've created a kind of catch-22 that ultimately is designed to strangle the church altogether. And Constantinople itself, Istanbul, people don't know also that the Turks didn't change the name of the city in 1453 when they conquered it. They changed it in 1918, and this was part of the Islamification and the Islamification of Turkey in general and the complete erasure of the Christian presence that I've been referring to. And yet Constantinople in 1914, at the beginning of World War I, was still 50% Christian. And now it is, as you say, less than 1% Christian, as is all of Turkey.
You know, something that I'd like you to unmask for people that are listening in, I think this would be one of the great services that you could do, unmask this organization called CARE. They now have a platform. I remember reading about them in the local newspaper. I mean, they have columns. They're after every terrorist attack, they get the soft hand glove. I mean, it's sort of you can't touch them. They're lauded. I mean, this is a group that needs unmasking.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you're absolutely right, Hank. They're constantly given a free pass by the establishment media. The establishment media constantly behaves as if CARE is some sort of a civil rights organization, which is, of course, it styles itself as being. They constantly claim that CARE is a reliable authority for a reliable Muslim voice in the United States. In reality, The Council on American Islamic Relations was founded by two former members of the Islamic Association for Palestine, which was later shut down for being a Hamas front. It has numerous ties to Hamas and to the Muslim Brotherhood. This is not just my opinion, but this has been established by the Justice Department. This is something that is very, very abundantly documented, as well as the fact that many CARE officials have been convicted of various terror-related activities. Some of them are in prison still. And the Council on American Islamic Relations, I had a photo essay at Jihad Watch a few months ago of brochures that were available at various conferences, various CARE conferences over the years. And there were so many, Hank, that said, don't talk to the FBI, don't talk to the police, do not cooperate with law enforcement counterterror efforts.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Robert Spencer. Former President Obama quoted from the Quran, "Whoever kills an innocent, it is as if he has killed all mankind. And whoever saves a person, it is as if he has saved all mankind." Now that sounds compassionate and peaceful, but Obama simply ignored the very next verse, which mandates punishment for anyone who Muslims do not regard as innocent. Find out how Islam and the Quran are being whitewashed by political leaders and pundits in Hank Hanegraaff's new book, Muslim: What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion. Receive your copy as our thanks for your gift simply by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly with more of this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Recent scholarly research has been significantly more open toward Jesus' healing the sick, his empty tomb, and even his post-resurrection appearances. So why have these same critics not fallen to their knees and proclaimed, "My Lord and my God"? Other topics include the Jewish Talmud and its use for Christian apologetics, the Cohen brothers and the riddle of existence, defending the biblical view of human sexuality using an effective Socratic question approach, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org. The history of Islam is one of wanton carnage and horrific oppression, and it has been whitewashed beyond recognition by our politically correct elites. According to credible sources, 120 million Africans, 80 million Hindus, 60 million Christians, 10 million Buddhists have been slaughtered in the name of Islam. And that doesn't include the millions of Muslims killed by other Muslims. Islam is the only significant religious system in the history of the human race with a socio-political structure of laws that mandate violence against the infidel. Read Hank Hanegraaff's stunning book, Muslim: What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion. Receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership when you call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. The complete Bible Answer Book, Collector's Edition, Revised and Updated, is a comprehensive collection of the most often asked as well as most difficult questions Hank Hanegraaff has received in nearly three decades of hosting the Bible Answer Man broadcast. This expanded edition contains new entries, leading readers to a better understanding of God and our relationship to Him in Jesus Christ. The complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, Revised and Updated, is a comprehensive, handy, and attractive volume that you will return to again and again. Take your exploration of God's Word to new heights and receive the revised and updated complete Bible Answer Book as our thank you for your gift by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. On this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff, we're bringing to you an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast, in which Hank talked with Robert Spencer, the director of Jihad Watch. For all the debate over Islam and its growing presence in the world, one thing is often overlooked. Islam is not a religion in the sanitized Western sense. It is, in contrast, an all-encompassing socio-political legal matrix that has bred a worldview antagonistic to anything but itself. While there may be millions of peaceful and tolerant Muslims, many of them are neighbors. Islam itself is hardly peaceful and tolerant. Read Hank Hanegraaff's new book, Muslim: What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion. To receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Let's rejoin Hank and Robert Spencer in their conversation.
I had a photo essay at Jihad Watch a few months ago of brochures that were available at various CARE conferences over the years. And there were so many, Hank, that said, don't talk to the FBI, don't talk to the police, do not cooperate with law enforcement counterterror efforts. So they claim that they are a neutral civil rights organization when actually they're Hamas, they're the Muslim Brotherhood, and they've opposed every counterterror measure that has ever been proposed or implemented. They have opposed every effort to stop terrorism. They claim racism, bigotry, and Islamophobia to anyone who tries to speak honestly about these issues.
And yet when you read their columns, you almost want to become a Muslim yourself. I mean, some of the columns, it's unbelievable. I want to talk a little bit, Robert, about Muhammad. I mean, obviously, we could spend hours talking about Muhammad, but when I was writing my book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion, I spent a lot of time studying the life and legacy of Muhammad. And the more I did, the more I was thinking in my mind, this has to be one of the most evil men who has ever walked upon the face of the earth. And yet, for polite society, for Western civil, so many people think that, well, Muhammad on the one hand, he's the founder of one of the three great Abrahamic religions. On the other hand, you have Jesus Christ and Moses. But talk about the distinction between Christ and Muhammad.
It's very important, Hank. And it's funny, you know, there's an assumption in the United States that I think goes back decades, that all religions are good, that if there's something called a religion, it must teach the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man, or if you want to take out the sexist language, then universal magnanimity or benevolence. The idea that there could be a religion that actually teaches hatred and violence, it just doesn't enter into the thinking of most Americans. And there is, because of groups like CARE, now a very widespread tendency for people to think there's something wrong with you if you point this out. But actually, the contrasts between Jesus and Muhammad are quite stark. Muhammad was no magnanimous, benevolent founder of a world religion. For example, you take John 7:53 to 8:11, where the woman taken in adultery is brought before Jesus, and he says, "Let he who is without sin cast the first stone." And by saying that, of course, he was declaring that mercy triumphs over judgment, as James says, and that therefore the idea that a woman should be stoned to death does not take precedence over her repentance and has to be set aside in the face of her repentance. So you have that versus numerous hadith are reports of Muhammad's words and deeds, where Muhammad not only approves of, but actually orders the stoning to death of various people accused of adultery. There's one woman who comes up to him. The parallel is nearly complete with the story in the Gospel of John, when a woman comes up to Muhammad and she says, "I've committed adultery." And he says, "Are you insane?" And she says, "No, I'm quite sane." And he says, "Are you pregnant?" And she says, "Well, I don't know." And he says, "Go away and see if you're pregnant." And so she comes back later and says, "Yes, I am pregnant." He says, "Go away until the child is born." And she goes away until the child is born. And then she comes back with the child, and he says, "Go away until the child is weaned." And she goes away until the child is weaned. She comes back when the child is eating solid food, and he orders her stoned to death. And this is presented in the Islamic tradition as an example of Muhammad's benevolence and magnanimity, that he didn't have her stoned to death right away, but waited until the child was born. And really, it's a horrifying story, because he just orphans the child and does so with the confidence that he's doing something that is good and right. It calls to mind Isaiah saying, "Woe to those who call good evil and evil good." And there are many, many stories of that kind. Of course, Jesus doesn't say anything about waging war or subjugating other people who don't believe in him, and yet Muhammad orders that and calls upon his followers to take up, to invite the unbelievers to Islam, and to take up the sword if they refuse, and to either convert them to Islam or kill them. And there's so many other things. You know, Jesus says to the Jesus is scourged and mocked and crucified, and Muhammad orders killed people who actually mock him and make fun of him. And he has several of them assassinated. These things are not in the stories of his enemies. These things are right in the Islamic tradition.
They are in the best Islamic tradition. And you have to think that every single Muslim, without exception, swears allegiance to Muhammad. And therefore, there are millions and millions of Muslims that do not have a true valuation on who Muhammad really was.
This is the problem, that I think that many, many Muslims don't have a true understanding of who Muhammad really was. We have to, it sounds kind of unbelievable, but we have to remember that if you were to convert to Islam today, which I don't recommend, if you were to convert to Islam today, you would have to pray in Arabic, and you might not know Arabic, and so you wouldn't be able to participate in the five daily prayers. And you would have to learn. Many, many Muslims just learn if they don't speak Arabic. Muslims in non-Arabic speaking areas like Pakistan, Indonesia, India, very highly populated Muslim areas, but not Arabic, they learn the prayers by rote. They learn the syllables without necessarily knowing what they mean. And so they might not hear about these things, about Muhammad, that are in the Islamic tradition, for the same reason, that they might be discussed in Arabic, and this is just not on the table for them. So even Zudi Jasser, the famous moderate Muslim, who is constantly on television as the moderate Muslim, there aren't a whole lot of them, and so he keeps being brought out. And he told me once, years ago, I asked him to join in an initiative that David Horowitz and I were doing, and he said he would as long as my name wasn't on it, because he didn't want to be associated with me because I had criticized Muhammad. I had written about Muhammad in my biography of Muhammad, The Truth About Muhammad. And so I said, "Well, what's the matter with the book, The Truth About Muhammad?" And he said, "Well, you say Muhammad was somebody who married a 9-year-old when he was 54. He actually married her when she was 6, but he consummated the marriage when he was 9. You say that Muhammad waged war. He had his enemies assassinated. He called upon his followers to conquer their enemies, the unbelievers, and all these things I don't believe." And I said, "Well, you know, I wrote that book based on the earliest Islamic texts. There really aren't any other Islamic texts that paint Muhammad as a sweetheart. These are the only things we know about Muhammad." And he said, "Well, I just don't believe Muhammad was like that. My grandparents told me he was a wonderful person who was the best person who ever lived, and my grandparents were wonderful people, and so I believe it too." And I think, okay, well, that's great, but it's not really anything more than his own private Islam. But many, many Muslims have the same idea, that Muhammad was wonderful, charitable, magnanimous, and great, and good to the poor, and good to the needy and the hungry, all the things that you could say about Jesus. And they just assume this without actually looking into or knowing what the content of the Islamic teachings regarding Muhammad really are.
I think there's a sense in which you can say there are two Muhammads. There's the Meccan Muhammad and the Medinan Muhammad and the two don't have a lot in common.
Yeah, you're right. That's absolutely true, Hank. And yet we also have to recall that the Meccan Muhammad, who is supposed to, he did preach, at least according to the records, he preached peace and tolerance. He did it because the Muslims were weak. The Muslim community in Mecca, the early part of Muhammad's career, according to Islamic tradition, it was characterized by the small Muslim community, the small size of the Muslim community. Muhammad had about 12 followers or 20 followers. The idea that he was going to command armies was a considerable way off. And that was at that time that he was preaching tolerance, and those teachings are in the Meccan passages of the Quran. He was preaching tolerance because the Muslims wanted to be tolerated. They were not preaching tolerance for everybody else. And when he moved to Medina later and became for the first time a military and political leader as well as a spiritual leader, then he's not preaching tolerance anymore. Then he's preaching first defensive jihad and finally offensive jihad to convert the non-Muslims to Islam or to subjugate them under the rule of Islamic law. And so the Meccan passages are in the Quran, but Islamic exegetes generally teach that because of the principle of abrogation, which is also based on the Quran, where Allah says in chapter 2, verse 106 of the Quran, whenever we abrogate a passage or cause it to be forgotten, we will give you one that's just as good or better. Because of that idea, you have the peaceful passages being superseded by the passages enjoining violence that come from the Medinan period. So you're absolutely right. There are, in a sense, two Muhammads, and one is peaceful and one is not. Unfortunately, in mainstream Islamic tradition, the violent Muhammad supersedes the peaceful Muhammad.
I mean, what Muhammad did in the market of Medina, and this is according to the most sound authoritative hadith or ahadith. I mean, what he did to the Jews is mind-boggling. And I mean, what he did in Medina, in general, to the Jews. I mean, he had three thriving Jewish tribes living there, and by the time he gets done, they're exiled or executed.
Yes. You had the Banu Nadir, the Banu Kainuka, and the Banu Qurayza, three Jewish tribes in Medina. They were quite powerful when Muhammad arrived, and Muhammad made a pact with them that ultimately he broke, and he exiled the first two, and then accusing the third of treachery when they were surrounded during the Battle of the Trench, which was really a siege. The pagan Meccans came to besiege Medina, and the Jews of the Banu Qurayza were inside with the Muslims. Now, after having seen how Muhammad had treated the other two, it's perfectly understandable, if true, but the Islamic tradition says, in any case, that they made contact with the pagan Meccans and offered to help from inside. When Muhammad found out about this, after the siege was broken, he had them all killed, had between 600 and 900 men beheaded and had their heads lopped off and the bodies dumped in the trench that had been built around the city to stop the siege. This was the one tribe. The other two, after he had exiled them, had gone to Khaybar, which was an oasis in northern Arabia. And Muhammad then later went to Khaybar, surprise raid, and massacred them. And later on his deathbed, he ordered that all any remaining Jews and Christians be expelled from Arabia altogether. And that's why, to this day, the government of Saudi Arabia today does not allow any practice of Judaism or Christianity or any other religion in Saudi Arabia. It's all forbidden because of Muhammad's word.
We'll pick up Hank's conversation with Robert Spencer in just a few moments. The Bible Answer Man broadcast and CRI's growing array of outreaches have never been more needed than they are today. And that's why we won't be shy in asking you to stand shoulder to shoulder with the Christian Research Institute through your persistent prayers and generous financial support. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and CRI in the battle for life and truth and receive your copy of Hank's new book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion, as our thanks for your gift. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. We'll be back right after the break with more of the Hank Unplugged podcast interview with Robert Spencer on this special edition of the Bible Answer Man. With over 500,000 copies in print, Hank Hanegraaff's Bible Answer books were born out of his many years of hosting the Bible Answer Man broadcast. He's taken his on-air answers to questions and chiseled them until only the gems emerge. Questions involving biblical interpretation, cults, science, ethics, apparent contradictions, and much more. This remarkable collection of concise answers is now even better. My goal, says Hank, is to take the complex and make it simple and memorable. Receive your copy of the complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, revised and updated, as our thank you for your gift by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. That's equip.org. So rapid and pandemic has been the decline of biblical literacy and spiritual discernment that our once unimaginable post-truth culture is effectively becoming an anti-truth culture. While the sun is setting on the Western Church, Islam is now the fastest growing religion in the world. This means that it's not simply enough to be aware of this threat. Christians need to wake up, stand up, and speak up. This means being able to counter the outright lies about Islam that otherwise will go unchecked with horrendous consequences. And that's what Hank Hanegraaff's book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion, will enable you to do. To receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. The Coen brothers are among the most critically acclaimed film directors of our time, yet the meaning behind their movies is often veiled in mystery. This offers a clue about the Coens' worldview. The difficulty is part of the design. Other topics include changing attitudes toward the resurrection of Jesus. Is a pro-life hermeneutic possible? How to revive a dead church? The Jewish Talmud and its use for Christian apologetics, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI. 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. Welcome back to a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. Islam is the only significant religious system in the history of the human race with a socio-political structure of laws that mandate violence against the infidel. Read the new book by Hank Hanegraaff, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion. To receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Well, let's now rejoin Hank's conversation with Islam research specialist Robert Spencer.
You mentioned Saudi Arabia, and I think it's important for people to recognize that the threat is not just a threat from ISIL or ISIS or whatever moniker you want to use to designate that particular terrorist organization, but you have fantastically wealthy oilmen in Saudi Arabia that are exporting the most virulent kind of Islam around the world.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Hank. You know, ISIS and Al-Qaeda are really both Saudi Arabia's babies. They are Saudi Arabia's creations. Not directly, but Saudi Arabia for years has been spreading their understanding of Islam, the Wahhabi understanding of Islam. Muhammad ibn Abdul Wahhab was a reformer in Islam. A lot of people say, well, what Islam needs is a reformation, and then everything will be all right. And I think here again, people who say these kinds of things, they're not informed. In reality, Islam had its reformation, and it was in the 18th century. Muhammad ibn Abdul Wahhab died in 1792. He was essentially a contemporary of George Washington. And he determined that he was going to clear out everything that was in Islam that was an innovation, that was bid'ah. Bid'ah is a terrible thing in Islam, innovation. You have to do everything as it was set out in the Quran or as Muhammad ordered it. But Muhammad ibn Abdul Wahhab had determined that the Muslims were doing a great many things that were not in the Quran or ordered by Muhammad, and so he was going to clear all that out. And he did. And he created what is known as Wahhabism, which is the official religion of Saudi Arabia. The Saudis, when they struck oil in the 1920s, they began to use their oil money to spread Wahhabi Islam around the world. And there were many places in the world where there was a cultural form of Islam that had developed that was simply a retreat from literalism. And not an outright rejection of the teachings of jihad, but simply sort of an ignoring of them, a setting aside of the teachings about jihad. And so the Saudis came in, and they had literature such as Jihad, the Forgotten Obligation, which is sort of a self-explanatory pamphlet teaching Muslims that they really should not be setting jihad aside, but they had to be waging jihad, and that this was very important. And so the cultural Islam that had taken root in Central Asia, in West Africa, in East Africa as well, in other areas of the world, was overwhelmed by this literalism that returned to the strict observance of the Quran, including jihad, and set the world on fire. And this is what we see with Al-Qaeda, with ISIS, with the other jihad groups. Really, they all come from this Saudi proselytizing and Saudi spreading of this understanding of Islam around the world.
Maybe something that would be helpful from your perspective, and I honestly don't know exactly how you'd answer this question. I spoke at the University of Tehran and Ulema Tabataba, the Sociology University, in 2012, 33rd anniversary of the overthrow of the Shah of Iran. And I walked the streets of Iran in the middle of the night, was greeted with acts of kindness. Iran, however, in the minds of most Westerners, is the real boogeyman. But it seems to me that I could not have done a lot of the things I did while I was in Iran in Saudi Arabia.
Well, you know, Iran has something that Saudi Arabia doesn't have, and that is it has a history, and not that long ago either, of being very pro-Western and secular. And, of course, the Shah and his father, also Reza Shah, they both were committed to something very like Kemalist secularism. Now, I'm no fan of Kemal Ataturk, the founder of modern Turkey, as I think I've made abundantly clear in discussing some of the history that revolved around the time that modern Turkey was founded. But Ataturk did do one thing, and that is he restricted political Islam, one thing that was good. And he was a Muslim himself, although not at all observant, and he's quoted as saying things like, Islam, the theology of an immoral Bedouin, is a dead thing. And he worked to restrict it in Turkey. He mandated, for one thing, that the imams could not preach the sermons that they wanted to preach every Friday in the mosques. They had to preach what they got from the Ministry of Religion in Ankara. And what came from the Ministry of Religion in Ankara never touched on the political aspects of Islam. In Iran, the Shah, Reza Shah, and then the son, Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, were both very taken with Kemalist Turkey, which is now, of course, on its last legs, as Erdogan is rolling up Turkish secularism and reimposing Islamic rule. But for many decades, Turkey was considered by many in the West to be the future of the Islamic world, and certainly the Iranian leaders thought that, the Shahs thought that, and they created in Iran a secular society that was quite pro-Western. And that was only overthrown in 1979. And that's not, you know, within the living memory, the adult memory of many people today. And so if you go to Iran, I mean, I wouldn't dare myself because I'd be probably arrested and spend the next the rest of my life in some Iranian prison. But if someone has not drawn Muhammad and written his biography and so on, written a commentary on the Quran, then you can go to Iran as a Westerner and you'll find many pro-Western people who don't like the regime, but they don't have a voice. They don't really have any way to make themselves known politically.
Well, I don't think I'll be going back to Iran anytime soon after writing the book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion.
Yes.
And I really am particularly grateful that you wrote the foreword to that book.
Thank you very much. It was my honor, and it's a very fine book. I look forward to seeing it.
Well, you know, I could talk to you forever, and once again, I want to thank you for what you have done. I mean, what you have done is a labor of love, and again, probably the most articulate spokesman on this subject on the planet today. So thank you, Robert. You're constantly in my thoughts and prayers. I admire you very much.
Well, likewise. Thank you so much, Hank. It's been a pleasure, and hope you can do it again soon.
Look forward to it. Robert Spencer, again, you can find all of his books on the web at equip.org. You can order them. Of course, they're available everywhere around the world, Amazon. But if you support the ministry, happy to send out any one of his books, and they're all fantastic. I can tell you I've read every one of them except the last two, cover to cover, and I'm going to remedy that woeful condition very, very soon. If you love what you've been listening to, please stand shoulder to shoulder with us in the battle for life and truth. You can do that by letting other people know about Hank Unplugged. You can not only listen, but you can subscribe, you can rate, review, and most of all, share. All of these ways are ways in which you can become a partner with this one-of-a-kind ministry outreach as we're making a difference while there's yet time. A great opportunity, Hank Unplugged, to listen to people like Robert Spencer. I mean, if you listen to Robert carefully, you know that he knows what he's talking about. This is not just academic. He has lived this, breathed this, he knows it. And we have to be very thankful for people like that at this particular junction in human history. I really want to thank you for tuning in to this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Over the last couple of days, I've been talking to Robert Spencer, and I can think of few people that know more about the subject of Islam and its impact on Western civilization than Robert Spencer. He, of course, as mentioned previously, is the director of Jihad Watch, as the author of New York Times bestsellers like The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades, The Truth About Muhammad, and much, much more. Robert was, of course, very, very kind. He wrote the foreword to my book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion, and very, very humbled by what he wrote. He said the Bible Answer Man becomes the Quran Answer Man. Long renowned as the Bible Answer Man, Hank Hanegraaff, says Robert Spencer, has gained a well-deserved reputation for thoroughness of research, honesty of evaluation, clarity of thought, and in Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion, he now becomes the Quran Answer Man, directing his considerable analytical powers to the religion of Islam, a study that world events are making daily more timely, important, and necessary for every Christian to undertake. Robert really zeroes in on what he thought was the most important section of the book, and that is that the book is organized around my trademark acronym, and I use more than one. And in this case, he's talking about how I use an acronym to explore the Islamic misapprehensions of the deity of Christ, original sin, the canon, the Trinity, the resurrection, the incarnation, new creation, and eschatology. All of that spells doctrine. So I'm using the straight stick of doctrine, and by contrast, you can see the end of the matter, which is when you lay the straight stick of essential Christian doctrine next to the Islamic counterfeit, then you see its crookedness. And what happens in Islam is the deed of Christ is denied as he is rendered a mere slave of a law. Original sin is recast as an original slip, a mere bout of forgetfulness. The divine canon is usurped by factual errors, faulty ethics, and the feigned eloquence of the Quran, meaning the emperor has no clothes. The incomprehensible Trinity, and I talk about this a lot, is commandeered by a morally defective Unitarian imposter. Resurrection, the greatest feat in human history, is demoted to mere fantasy, and incarnation is demeaned as blasphemy. The scintillating truth that if anyone is in Christ as a new creation is negated by a capricious Allah and eschatology. The thread that weaves the tapestry of Scripture into a harmonious pattern is ignominiously sullied by the sensual enticements of a largely incoherent Islamic eschatological charade. Well, anyway, all of that in the foreword by Robert Spencer. You can find that foreword in Muslim. Well, you need to know about the world's fastest growing religion. I want to say a couple of things. One is this comes again from a podcast, and we're not only broadcasting, we're podcasting. And so you want to check out equip.org, check out our podcast on equip.org. It is absolutely fantastic. We are interviewing some of the most significant, interesting, intelligent people on the planet in these podcasts. And you can hear them wherever you consume your favorite podcast, but most specifically at equip.org. Also want to mention that the book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion, the book I just referred to that Robert Spencer wrote the foreword to, is available to those that support the ministry all this month. So check it out on the web at equip.org or talk to one of our resource consultants. All that information you'll find on the web at equip.org. Well, we're out of here for today. We'll see you next time on Monday with more of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Stay tuned for that.
Thanks for tuning in to the Bible Answer Man broadcast. To listen to this Hank Unplugged podcast interview with Robert Spencer in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. If you'd like to stand shoulder to shoulder with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute in the battle for life and truth, and receive as our thanks for your gift Hank's new book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion, or any of the other resources mentioned on the broadcast today, call our resource consultants now at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI. Or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write to us at CRI P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. A deeper understanding of the Bible's principles and truths will improve the spiritual, moral, and ethical problems facing our nation. Yet the obstacle isn't that the Bible doesn't speak to our greatest needs or answer our deepest questions. It's that the average person lacks the time and tools to extract the answers. That's why Hank Hanegraaff wrote the complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, revised and updated. This expanded edition addresses over 210 of the top questions he's received as host of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Hank has taken the complex and made it simple and memorable. Receive the revised and updated complete Bible Answer Book as our thank you for your gift by calling 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit equip.org. That's equip.org. The history of Islam is one of wanton carnage and horrific oppression, and it has been whitewashed beyond recognition by our politically correct elites. According to credible sources, 120 million Africans, 80 million Hindus, 60 million Christians, 10 million Buddhists have been slaughtered in the name of Islam. And that doesn't include the millions of Muslims killed by other Muslims. Islam is the only significant religious system in the history of the human race with a socio-political structure of laws that mandate violence against the infidel. Read Hank Hanegraaff's stunning book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion. Receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership when you call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org.